Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix and Rohan Lockhart.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, joined this week by my colleague at Sports Illustrated, Rohan Lockhart. And Rohan, it's always good when we have some breaking news on the podcast. We are recording this on the day the NBA returns. Tuesday night, doubleheader, Warriors Suns, Lakers Nuggets. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch on Tuesday. But the big story over the weekend was Giannis Antetokounmpo once again saying, "Milwaukee, you are my home." Giannis agreeing to a 3-year, $186 million contract extension. We'll get into kind of the nuances of why this extension makes sense financially right now and why he would do it now and, you know, what kind of contracts he can sign in the future. But, you know, this was something I think that Bucks fans and the Bucks front office was optimistic about in the aftermath of Milwaukee acquiring Damian Lillard. But now here we are with Damian Lillard under contract for the next four seasons, Giannis Antetokounmpo under contract for, I believe, three of the next four seasons. I'll get the numbers right. But the last year's a player option of that deal. But he's under contract at least until his early 30s, putting him through his prime years in Milwaukee. Your reaction to this deal getting done at the 11th hour before the start of the season?
Pretty surprised, only because Giannis himself kind of mentioned early this summer why financially it wouldn't make the most sense for him to do it now. As you alluded to, there is some kind of, not quite complicated math, but a series of steps that Giannis can undergo to kind of maximize the financial impact of taking this deal now. So he's still coming out ahead money-wise. I mean, I wrote when the Damian Lillard trade went down, I should say, that this was a huge win. And it only becomes a bigger win for Milwaukee if Giannis signs. And that's what happened. And I think, listen, this team, the expectations still win a title, all those things. But for the city of Milwaukee, for the franchise, even if they don't win a title now, if you get another three or four years of Giannis Antetokounmpo, you get his entire prime in Milwaukee, you put off the conversation at least for a couple years about whether he's leaving, etc. That's a huge win. It makes the Lillard trade a win already. It's really incredible work by their franchise. I mean, we sat here, Chris, I'd say at the beginning of the summer, kind of wondering aloud what moves are on the table for the Bucks, because they looked a little bit boxed in at the start of the summer in terms of what they could do to improve the roster around Giannis. To go around and get Damian Lillard and then sign Giannis to an extension the same summer when no one was expecting either of those moves, it's an unequivocal, unqualified, total home run for the Bucks.
No, I tweeted this in the immediate aftermath. This was an executive of the year stretch for John Horst. Not only does he get Damian Lillard into the fold, which makes the Bucks better in the short term, he ensures long-term viability by getting Giannis's name on a contract. So just to clear up the math here and sort of explain what kind of deal Giannis is signing. He is under contract now for the next 4 years. This year is age 28 season. He's going to make $45.6 million next year. He'll make $45.8 million. The new deal kicks in the 25-26 season, which will put Giannis at $57.6 million that year, $62.2 million in 26-27, and he has a player option for 22-28, which would be year five of this new deal that he's operating under, which would be worth $66.8 million. The reason that he signs this contract right now, and I want to give credit to Bobby Marks, the ESPN front office insider, because he's been able to explain this in a way even idiots like you and me can understand. It's mutually beneficial for the two sides to do a deal like this right now because of that over 38 rule that exists. Giannis could sign a short-term extension again with Milwaukee in 2026, and then a four-year extension with the Bucks in 2028. So what this deal is effectively doing, or the message it's sending, is that Giannis is a Buck for life. He's going to be alongside Damian Lillard for the next four seasons. That's a guy we've talked about a lot. He wants to play with. He likes Damian Lillard, and he wants to play with Damian Lillard. Not only is Giannis, you know, getting himself financially set up for the short term by signing this three-year extension, he is putting the dominoes in place to make the max possible amount of money over the next 10 years of his playing career. So anyone that might have been wondering if Giannis is going to be a Buck over the long term, it sure looks right now that Giannis is going to be playing in Milwaukee for the entirety of his NBA career. I think we're looking, Rohan, at another Dirk Nowitzki. I think this is kind of a Dirk-like situation where the Bucks have shown Giannis enough. They've shown Giannis enough that he is willing to commit to this team long-term.
Absolutely. And I'll just leave a little bit of room. You know, our old friend Howard Beck wrote about it today for The Ringer that everything is great right now, you know, up until things change, right? If this flames out, whatever, we've seen stars request trades, et cetera. I'll leave a little room for that, but I'm with you. And I think it's great for the NBA. I really do. I want to see Jokic in Denver for his entire career. I want to see Giannis in Milwaukee for his entire career. We've kind of lost that the last few years with guys moving around teams so much. Like, you know, there's been this conversation this week, should Kevin Durant have his jersey retired in Golden State? And I think it'll happen, and I think it's fine, but it's just not the same. It's not the same as a guy like Giannis staying in one place for his entire career. It's refreshing to see. I think it's just so good for the league. And I'm excited, man. I'm excited to see him battle with the Celtics this year. I miss the days when it felt like you could kind of think these two teams are going to have to get through each other for the next few years. And I think we're setting up for that with Giannis and Tatum for the next few years. And as a basketball fan, I'm just really excited. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think he's going to be kind of remembered as this generation's Dirk for just how synonymous he is with Milwaukee. And the fact that Giannis said the things he said earlier this summer, he said he wants to play for a winner, and backed it up, I just think says a lot about the kind of person he is. Like, that was not just posturing or whatever. Milwaukee made some good faith moves, and he signed a good faith extension in return.
Yeah, look, Giannis, you know, to contrast this with Lillard's situation in Portland, Lillard committed to the Blazers, but he didn't demand action out of them before he committed to them. Giannis came out this offseason in multiple interviews and said, you got to make sure, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, you've got to make sure that you have a championship roster around me. And he put a lot of pressure on the Bucks to get something done. And to the Bucks' credit, for the second time in 3 years, they pulled off a deal that made Giannis happy. Jrue Holiday, his acquisition a few years ago, that made Giannis happy. Now Damian Lillard, bringing him in, that makes Giannis happy. So he was able to use his status with the team to push them to go all in for a championship. And once they did, he committed. You know, he was true to his word and said he would commit to the Milwaukee Bucks. And I do think that's commendable for Giannis as well. I think, you know, short-term, if you're looking for questions about the Bucks, there are a couple of them, right? Mm-hmm. Chris Middleton is the most glaring. Like, Chris Middleton, yeah. I have no idea what to expect from Chris Middleton this year. He missed half the season last year.
And then there's injuries. That weird, vague preseason.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
Yeah,
I'm going to get to that. Like the coaching stuff. The Chris Middleton his status is a big variable here. I think with a healthy Chris Middleton, the Bucks are the number one team in the East. It's still close because I think Boston's really good, obviously. But with Middleton, I think they're number one. Without him, I think they're number two. So I'm anxious to see how healthy he is at the start of the season and how healthy he can be throughout the season. And the other part of it is coaching. I mean, this Terry Stotts story, it's kind of gone away over the last couple of days because, you know, frankly, who really cares about an assistant coaching change on an NBA team? But this is a real thing. I mean, Terry Stotts was given a hands-on role to effectively be the architect of this Bucks offense. We know this because Damian Lillard came out last week and said, look, this is the same offense I ran in Portland. The guys that are veterans on the Milwaukee team, we're coming to him and saying, well, what about this? What about that? Like, how do you, how did, what's the right way to run this particular play. So Terry Stotts was not just a sage voice on Adrian Griffin's bench. He was someone that was intimately involved and integrally involved in what this team does offensively. Now, we've seen the reporting that there was some kind of public blow up at a shoot around or a practice between Terry Stotts and Adrian Griffin. I had not heard about that. I had heard in the hours after Stotts decided to leave the team that he just wasn't comfortable being Adrian Griffin's assistant coach. And that's kind of what it came down to. Terry Stotts has been head coach in the NBA for a long time. He has had some levels of success as a head coach. Adrian Griffin came in, and Adrian Griffin, people have told me like he rides his assistants out there. He makes them work pretty hard. And Adrian Griffin, worked under Scott Skiles for a while, worked under a number of different coaches in different situations. Adrian Griffin had high expectations and demanded a lot from his assistant coaches. And the way I was explained to me was, Terry Stotts just wasn't comfortable with the dynamic, didn't like the dynamic with Adrian Griffin. Maybe that dust up in practice was the straw that broke the camel's back, but it felt like the people I talked to that it was coming. And I don't think this is inconsequential. I really don't, because, now everybody else on that Bucks staff gets bumped up a seat. Now you don't necessarily have the guy on the bench with that kind of, if gravitas is the right word, but certainly experience that Terry Stotts brought to the table. I don't think we can dismiss his exit as nothing, because I do think it's something.
Yeah, not to mention his relationship with Damian Lillard, right? I mean, that's something that I think was probably providing Dame some level of comfort. He obviously posted a photo of them together on Instagram after. Take that for what it's worth.
Terry Stotts and Damian Lillard will always have a great relationship. I mean, Terry Stotts empowered Damian Lillard over 9 years
in
Portland. Like, took him on as a rookie and helped develop him into the player he became. So I can understand the loyalty between Lillard and Stotts.
The one interesting thing about the Bucks and Celtics, I'd say, is the questions around their coaching staffs. Mazzulla had to deal with it a lot last year, especially during the playoffs. Now, listen, at the end of the day, he came within a game 7 and Jason Tatum maybe not turning his ankle of making it to the finals. So maybe that stuff was overblown. But, there's been a lot of talk about the assistants the Celtics added this summer and the reasons they needed to do that, bringing in a guy like Jeff Van Gundy, for example, to consult with them, and the importance of that experience, that it's a lot of pressure on Adrian Griffin in his first year to deliver a team with title expectations, and now he's losing his most experienced assistant coach. It's going to be very interesting. I think that's a serious variable for the Bucks. We've seen it cut both ways. I mean, we've seen Nick Nurse have a lot of success. We've seen Ime Udoka have a lot of success. Other times it doesn't go as well. So I think it's going to be very interesting keeping an eye on just how the coaching staff in both Milwaukee and Boston ultimately affects what those teams do. I think one of the undercurrents of the Celtics summer, for example, was maybe moving on from some of the guys that didn't fully buy in with Mazzulla, guys who necessarily didn't have the best relationship with him. So I don't know that it's going to make a huge impact because they're just so much more talented than the rest of the conference, but I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it certainly adds a wrinkle to what Milwaukee's trying to do this season. I think with such a slim margin between the Celtics and the Bucks, anything can make a difference. So that's worth keeping an eye on this year. All right, so the season does officially start today, Tuesday, but there's still a lot of unknowns. And one of the big unknowns is James Harden. And if it feels like we talk about James Harden every week, we do talk about James Harden every week. And we're not alone. You turn on NBA Today and they're talking about James Harden. You pull up any other podcast and they're talking about James Harden. So unfortunately, we can't just ignore this topic because it still is a major topic. Philadelphia is one of the top 3 or 4 teams in the Eastern Conference, and James Harden is one of the top players on that team, one of the top players over the last 5 years in the NBA. So we do have to talk about it. That's just kind of my preamble to all that. But I don't know what to talk about right now because I don't know what James Harden is thinking at the moment. And I'm not sure Philadelphia really knows exactly what he's thinking. James Harden has been away from the 76ers for over a week now. At this point, the Sixers aren't saying if or when they expect to get him back. They opened the season on Thursday against Milwaukee, and it seems very pie in the sky to expect him to be there and to be playing for that team. We've heard some reporting that Harden is not in game shape at the moment, and even wasn't in game shape when he was in practice with Philadelphia. So it seems unlikely he'd play in the Sixers opener one way or the other. And who knows if he came back, when he'd be ready to play after that. This is a mess, Rowan. It really is. And what this is going to come down to, again, really is Daryl Morey's appetite for dysfunction and just how long he's willing to allow James Harden to muddy the waters around this team. What kind of stomach he has for. A lot of people have compared this to the Ben Simmons situation. It's different because Simmons had multiple years left on his contract, and that gave the Sixers, you know, kind of a measure of leverage in those situations. But what do you think of where we are with the 76ers and James Harden?
So it's funny because when we talked about it this summer, I kept thinking Harden's going to make it bad, and I think you'd kind of convince me there's no way he's going to do what he did in Houston and Brooklyn because he's at the stage of his career where he can't afford it. This is such a bold strategy from James Harden at this stage in his career with his playoff resume, with the last time we saw him play basketball, which was not good, his last two games, to just pull this kind of stunt, to be honest. And now, I want to be careful because, you know, there's some kind of online conjecture that maybe he's dealing with a personal matter in Houston and that's contributing to this. I don't know. This is just such a mess. And Nick Nurse is asked about this pretty much every day in practice. And he looks like he's been on this job for like 8 years. He looks like a second term president in terms of exasperation already. And the season hasn't even started yet. I mean, what are his options? He's just going to play like Harden, or he's going to play Maxi and Embiid like 45 minutes a night. I guess Harden's living up to his word in terms of what he said over the summer. I'll never play for Daryl Morey again. And I think you're the first person who pointed this out, and maybe the only person. Like, the threat of Harden not being able to enter free agency next year is not a good one because the Sixers do not want him on the books next summer. Like, their whole thing is, we're going to be a cap space team again. We're going to try to make that work. At this point, I don't know. You're right to say, like, Morey, I think, has a higher appetite for dysfunction than most GMs around the league. I think that he has shown over the years that he's a little bit less worried about personality fit than on paper fit than most GMs. The issue I just keep coming back to is, at what point does Embiid say enough is enough? Like, I'm not dealing with another player's insubordination. And while Morey may have the appetite for dysfunction, if Embiid starts saying, you know, complaining like he did over the summer, I think you may have to just, I'm just taking a Clippers deal at this point. Like, I don't know why Terrence Mann has become such a deal breaker on either side, frankly. Like, he's a good young player, but he's also like, he's 27. I mean, like, it's getting over the top. And if I've said this a couple of times now, if Maxi is the kind of player the Sixers think he is, which is maybe a budding all-star, then I don't think that they need to replace Harden's kind of shot creation and playmaking to the degree that they think they do. Like, I just think about it, again, a team like the Denver Nuggets. I think we saw that Jokic is better than Embiid, but like, no one was looking as Jamal Murray before this year as an all-NBA guy, etc. He might not even be top five at his position, frankly. So I think you could get away with making a trade for really, really good role players. It just depends who's really on the table. I mean, if I could get Norm Powell back at this point, I don't know if the Clippers would even do that. Like, no, I'm doing that if I'm Philly.
I think it's more Robert Covington that would be in the mix. Marcus Morris would be in
it the would mix. Be kind of funny if it was Robert Covington and it just came full circle back to what maybe trades they never should have made in the first place.
You know, the Embiid variable in all this is a significant one. You saw Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer report today that the Knicks, who have been sitting on Joel Embiid for some time now, are willing to do a deal that involves Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, and multiple first-round picks. Now, I don't think that is a huge revelation because, you know, I think it would probably take even more in terms of draft capital to get Joel Embiid out of Philadelphia. But, you know, that puts, you know, New York and Embiid and his part in all this into the water supply again. It gets us talking about Joel Embiid and, you know, his future in Philadelphia. And the Sixers have to closely monitor that. They cannot afford for Joel Embiid to say, you know what? I don't want to be here long term. I want out. You got to trade me, because then you're starting from scratch. You're ripping this team down to the studs and starting over effectively. So you've got to watch that pretty closely. All that being said, my opinion has not changed. The 76ers need to stand strong here. The 76ers cannot get frustrated and just move James Harden for the spare parts that you're talking about. Because if we've learned nothing else from the Damian Lillard situation, is that you never know what can happen in the weeks and months ahead. You never know when another team could decide to put more on the table. Let's use the Clippers as an example. They just recently named Terrence Mann as the fifth starter. Great. He can play alongside Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Ivica Zubac. He can, you know, get that opportunity that he's been looking for. And maybe he thrives in it. Maybe it turns out Terrence Mann is as good as Lawrence Frank and that front office believe that he is. But what if he's not? What if he struggles early on and the Clippers take that starting spot away from him and give it to Marcus Morris or Norman Powell or Robert Covington or any of the other guys they have on that bench? Does Terrence Mann become available all of a sudden? Do the Clippers decide, you know, 3 weeks into the season that Terrence Mann is expendable? I think if you're Philadelphia, you have to at least see if that happens. Right now, Terrence Mann is not available. You can't get him from the Clippers in a James Harden deal. Right now, you can get a first-round draft pick, you can get a pick swap, and you can get some salary filler. That's really all you can get from the Clippers for James Harden. You've seen all the reporting that's out there about how there's a wide gap between what the Sixers want and what the Clippers are willing to give. That's all true. So if you're the Sixers, you've got to at least wait. You've also got to wait to see if a version of the Milwaukee Bucks materializes. Remember, Milwaukee was not in the Damian Lillard sweepstakes in early July. When that thing got white hot, the Bucks were not part of it. It was only after things changed, specifically with Giannis asking for this team to do more, when the Bucks got interested. What team out there could be that version of the Milwaukee Bucks? I look at Miami, and I wonder what's going to happen down there. We'll talk about them in a couple of minutes, but what if the Heat get off to a really bad start? What if Kyle Lowry looks a little bit older? What if Jimmy Butler looks a little bit older? What if Tyler Hero, you know, after an offseason where his name was in trade rumors, doesn't play up to the level the Heat need him to? What if Miami says, you know what? We got to do something. Jimmy Butler's 34 years old. Bam Adebayo's in his prime. Why don't we take a flyer on James Harden? Why don't we see if Harden can be a missing piece to this group? I think you've got to at least wait. Maybe it doesn't happen with LA. Maybe it doesn't happen with Miami. But what is the worst that can happen? You suffer through a few weeks of James Harden sitting out. Is that really that bad? Is that really worth not waiting to see if something better materializes? Daryl Morey, he's got the stomach for this. He's got to show it. He's got to take his time, and he has to be patient with James Harden, because dealing him right now for 25 cents on the dollar would be a big mistake.
All right, not to go like full De Niro and Heat right here, but there's another side to that coin, which is, and I'm not saying this is likely, but there's also a world in which the Clippers get off to a really hot start. Kawhi and Paul George are healthy. Terrence Mann is playing really well. They have depth, and they're like, why would we break this up? Less likely, but possible, Miami, Eric Spoelstra finds some combinations that work. They get good contributions from the young guys, and they're doing better than what most people expect. And in that same world, there's a chance that Philly gets off to a rough start. Nick Nurse is fed up. And like we talked about, Embiid starts getting frustrated earlier and earlier. I think that's what they have to protect against. Now, which one of those scenarios is more likely? A lot has to go right for some other teams in that other scenario for Philly to get really nervous. I do think that maybe they err on the side of let's let it play out for a little bit, see if someone struggles. Maybe a team that we haven't really talked about that I wonder if they could get involved, the Pelicans. Maybe they struggle early. They're always being talked about in some of these moves. So there are definitely teams on the board that I think could get involved. But I give Daryl Morey credit for this. His appetite for kind of the dysfunction, the drama, is so much higher than what mine would be. When I'm so nervous about Joel Embiid every single day, Is that,
yeah, but there's a message, Rohan. There's a message you could deliver to Joel Embiid during all this. It's that, look, the worst case scenario is here is we have to deal with James Harden, sit him out, fine him, suspend him, all that stuff. And then next summer, we'll let that $35.6 million come off the books. We'll add it to Tobias Harris's like $40 million. And then we'll go into the offseason with 70-some-odd million dollars in cap space and you and Tyrese Maxey under contract. That's a pretty good case that you can make, because there are going to be some free agents out there, restricted and otherwise. Klay Thompson is going to hit the open market. I think that's an intriguing name when you're talking about Philadelphia. I just think there are you can make a reasonable case to Joel Embiid that, look, this sucks. There's no two ways about it. We wish James Harden was happier, but we think we can be pretty good without him. If Tyrese Maxey stays healthy, let's put the ball in his hands more, he might rise to an all-star level. I've said this a million times. I want this to be remembered. Tobias Harris is going to have the best year he's had in a long time, because Tobias Harris is in a contract year.
Tobias.
Everybody in a contract year plays well. So, or at least 95% of them. So I think Tobias Harris is going to have the best year of his Philadelphia 76ers career. That's a team that is still a cut below Milwaukee and a cut below Boston, but that's still a team that can contend for the three spot in the Eastern Conference. And that's not bad if you're talking about this being kind of a gap year for Joel Embiid. That, to me, that's a reasonable case that Daryl Morey can make to Embiid.
I don't disagree, but man, tough to stomach the idea of a gap year when Embiid is, it just, you never know with the knees and the playoff stuff and et cetera, but I'm with you, man. I really have no idea how this is going to play out. Nobody I've talked to really has a good, I mean, I think people still, if anyone who's like, would quote unquote, a betting person, I think would bet on him ending up with the Clippers. But I don't think people really thought he'd take the strategy to this extreme this early. And it's pretty kind of fascinating to watch.
Well, if you didn't think that Harden would do this, you are ignoring history, right? And very recent history.
But I agree. But even I thought he would put up more of a fight. But I think the undercurrent that you and I even kind of talked about was the fact that he's on an expiring deal and he's old and his respect has dropped from his playoff performances. I think a lot of us thought even if he pulled some stunts, he'd have to play just to get that trade value back up. But he seems to not care about that in the slightest.
No, I it's really hard to discern exactly what James Harden cares about. Just that getting away from Daryl Morey seems to be at the top of his list. The other Monday news was that Klay Thompson and the Golden State Warriors could not agree to a contract extension, meaning Klay Thompson will be a free agent next summer. He'll be 34 when he hits the free agent market. He's coming off a season where he averaged 22 points per game, shot 41% from three, still one of the best three-point shooters in the entire NBA. Not the defender that he used to be, but he's still a very good, I would say, defender, good to very good. Defending the wing position, seems to be pretty well over the knee and Achilles injuries that he's had in recent years. Played 69 games last year, which is pretty solid. So two questions here, Rohan. Are you surprised that Klay and the Warriors couldn't come to an agreement? And, you know, could this be the, you know, first domino to fall in the Warriors, you know, Thompson, Curry, Draymond era?
I'm definitely surprised, only because they signed Draymond, right? And I think when we were talking about maybe this being the beginning and end of this core, last year obviously you had the Poole incident. I think all signs pointed to Draymond maybe being the first guy out. And then they trade Jordan Poole, and you're like, okay, they're kind of committed to this core now. They're kind of committed to the veterans. There's a couple interesting things here. First is, we know Bob Myers had a really close relationship to these guys. He's said that. And he said part of the reason why maybe he didn't want to continue in this job is because, you know, he has to balance his personal relationships with these business decisions. I think it's still a little bit unclear how close some of these players are to Mike Dunleavy Jr., who's now in charge of that front office, and where his loyalties lie and what his preferences are, the kind of team he wants to build. We've seen him be aggressive this summer. I'm just surprised on so many levels. At the end of the day, even if you think Klay is diminished, and I'm with you, I think he's still a solid enough defender. He's not a liability in the playoffs. He hit a ton of threes last season. Why wouldn't you just sign him to the same length that Curry's contract is, 3 more years. Let these guys ride it out in the sunset together. Even if they're bad, they're still filling out that arena every night. Like, there's value to that franchise to having those guys finish their careers together, even if the team is not a championship contender 2 years from now. So I'm surprised, especially after Draymond's deal got done. I thought that maybe there was some kind of understanding. We're going to have these guys, all contracts all end at the same time, and that'll be that. And if that's not the case, I don't know if it really is. They're just so far apart that Clay wants a full max and they're willing to go to another number, but it's definitely in play, right? It has to be in play. And what would frustrate me as a Warriors fan is this summer felt like all about getting rid of the bad vibes that last year's team had in the wake of the pool punch, etc. Why introduce this variable again of guys being unhappy? And it's pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, I was surprised. I wrote a couple of weeks ago that I thought a deal would ultimately get done because, you know, this isn't just a player and a team. This is, you know, one of the foundational players of this Warriors era, a player that has been instrumental in the 4 championship level success that Golden State has had. So I thought, you know, there'd be some haggling, there'd be some posturing, but ultimately a deal would get done. I don't know what the numbers are. I'll say that first. I do know that this wasn't close. Like, this wasn't like 11th hour, you know, we're only a couple of million dollars apart. But I think they were pretty far apart on both years, and I think they were pretty far apart on the annual salary. And if you're Klay Thompson, you had to have been looking around at some of the money being spent this past offseason and, you know, wondering where your share of it was going to be. I mean, use Fred VanVleet, for example. Now, maybe Fred VanVleet got overpaid by Houston, but Fred VanVleet's going to make an excess of $40 million in each of the next 2 seasons. Fred VanVleet's a very good player. Is Fred VanVleet like $10 million per year better than Klay Thompson? I don't know. I don't think so. I think the value of Klay Thompson to that Warriors team is extremely high. You know, and I had written that I thought, you know, people I talked to around the NBA believed that Klay Thompson was on the open market would be worth, you know, $30 to $35 million per season. I still believe that if Klay Thompson goes out next year and has a year that is comparable to the one he played this past season, there are going to be teams that offer him, you know, a 3-year deal at $30 million plus per year, maybe $35 million per year. Now, I mentioned Philadelphia, and I don't know this to be true at this point. I'm just kind of looking at the numbers and looking at the need. Like, if you're Philadelphia and you've got 70-some-odd million dollars in cap space and you've got Embiid and Tyrese Maxey under contract, is there a better player to plug into a hole than a still productive Klay Thompson? Like, if you're Daryl Morey, would you blink at giving Klay Thompson a 3-year deal at $90 or $100 million? I wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't. Klay Thompson, in addition to being, you know, still one of the NBA's best shooters, has championships on his resume, has a great reputation, being a locker room guy. I mean, who else would, are there better players to play?
He'd be fantastic with Embiid.
Like, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, play off of Joel Embiid. Like, if you're Golden State, you know, and again, there's reasons for everything. But if you're Golden State, don't you have to look at next summer and think, boy, the 76ers with all that potential cap space, you know, they might be willing to make a run at our guy and pay him more than we're offering up right now. I think that's got to be a legitimate concern. I thought Draymond was going to be the first to go as well, you know, for age and other reasons. But, you know, if Klay plays great, and I think there's no reason to believe he can't play at least to the level he was last season, I think there's a real risk of Golden State losing him next summer.
For sure. And it just takes one team with cap space, and Philly could be desperate. I just don't get it. And look, they've paid a lot of luxury tax, and I'm not trying to minimize that. It's not my money, but the amount the Warriors have paid in luxury tax payments pales in comparison to the value their franchise has skyrocketed because of Steph, Clay, and Dre and what they mean to the city. And you just kind of have an easy out. Just sign them to a 3-year extension, like 3 years, $100 million, even if you have to go $115, whatever it takes, man. Get it done. These guys mean too much to the city. And as long as they are there, even if this team is not a true contender, That building's going to sell out every night. You're going to sell a ton of jerseys, even if the new Nike ones are awful. And again, maybe Mike Dunleavy is trying to take some ownership of what he wants his team to look like. I'm not putting this all on him. As you alluded to, I think the gap is pretty big in terms of what both sides want. But yeah, man, I'm pretty surprised they didn't find a way to get this done. And I don't think that this is a guy you want to play with fire with.
No, I agree. Last topic I want to get into. Tyler Hero. A lot of eyeballs on him early on in Miami. Former sixth man of the year. One of the better scorers in the NBA. One of the better shooters in the NBA. Coming off in a postseason where he didn't play beyond a couple of games, or one game really, in that first round for Miami when they made that run to the finals. He's obviously going to have a bigger role on that team with Max Strus gone, with Gabe Vincent gone. The Heat fans, when they listen to shows like this, they get angry when we talk about them. But you are a resident Heat expert, because they think we don't talk about them with like an educated viewpoint.
Right.
Like, you say something negative about Kyle Lowry or Tyler Hero or Bam Adebayo, you don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, you, Rohan, are well-versed in Heat mm-hmm. culture. You wrote mm-hmm. the story about Jimmy Butler for the magazine out this past week. What are reasonable expectations for Tyler Hero? What do the Heat need out of him this season? Because they're going to need something. You know, I was just doing the power rankings for SI.com that are out today. And, you know, you want to give Miami the respect of a team coming off the finals appearance, but I'm really hard-pressed to put them, you know, anywhere but in like that 15, 16, 17 range, to be honest with you. Like, given the roster that they have and the losses that they absorbed, you know, what could move them up is Tyler Hero getting back to bubble Tyler Hero, the guy that looked like he could be a franchise guard. Is that guy still there? Is that guy revivable? Do you think the offseason, where his name was in trade rumors every single day, will have a negative effect? What are the expectations on him?
I mean, that's really the question for them. I will say this. Everyone who I talk to, Heat-related, everyone I talk to in South Florida, seems to believe that he handled the Lillard situation as well as possible. He said all the right things publicly, and I think privately it didn't affect his work ethic, anything like that. Shout out to my guy, Wes Goldberg, who hosts the Locked on Heat podcast, writing for The Ringer. Tyler Hero and Eric Spoelstra were at lunch together when they found out Damian Lillard was traded. And I think that kind of helped take the air out of the balloon a little bit. And something that I'd say that I've learned about the Heat over the last few years is there's not a disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff, but there's definitely a little bit of a line of demarcation. And I think the guys have a specific relationship with Eric Spoelstra that I think even Pat Riley, when he was a coach, didn't have with his players back in the day. I mean, you talk to any player who's played with Spo, it's he gives them a ride home after practice. He gives them books to read during the season. He's someone who is very in tune with his players, and I think he is the coach perhaps best positioned to get the most out of a guy like Tyler when he's gone through the summer he's gone through. So I think the motivation will be there, the drive will be there, the focus will be there. To me, what it comes down to is two things. One, can he assume the ball handling responsibilities they've lost with Gabe Vincent? Look at the Heat's point guard rotation right now. It's Kyle Lowry, who's probably going to miss at least 15 to 20 games, and it's Drew Smith. Those are their point guards. Hero's going to need to handle the ball. That's going to be important. Secondly, the scoring is going to be there. I'm not worried about the scoring. It's always going to come down to his defense with me. And, you know, I alluded to this in a different show I did. And think about a guy like Max Strus. I did a story on Max Strus in 2022 where his coach at D3 Lewis was like, man, I wish Max was playing the defense he's playing now in the Eastern Conference Finals that he played in college. You can get better on that end of the floor. And I think that's what it's going to come down to for Tyler. He's never going to be elite, but can he get to a point where people aren't wondering if the team's better with him off the floor in the playoffs? That's what it's going to come down to. Cause I think the scoring, it's gotten better every year. It's gotten more efficient every year. He was a good pull-up shooter last year, catch and shoot, et cetera. All those things are trending in the right direction. It's, can he defend?
Yeah. He's the most reliable backcourt player that Miami has right now, if you count Jimmy Butler more as a wing. And, you know, Butler, you know, he was pretty durable last year, but you have to kind of, you know, mm-hmm. account for between 20 and 25 games he's going to sit out. you know, for a number of reasons. Maybe just keep him fresh or nagging injuries. Bam Adebayo in his prime, you can always count on him. But, I mean, look, they're probably going to start Kevin Love, probably going to start Josh Richardson maybe. I mean, or if not, these guys are going to play prominent roles. I mean, you're talking about minimum guys that are playing big roles on this team. What can overcome that is Tyler Hero getting back to being the bubble guy. And when I talk to scouts about Hero, that comes up a lot. Like in the bubble during that Miami run to the finals, he looked like a franchise guard. Since then, he's looked like a scoring guard, but he hasn't looked like the franchise guard that some of those scouts thought they were seeing, you know, during that COVID affected season. So, you know, he's the guy to watch down in Miami. There's no question about it. He'll be the guy that can be a difference maker for that Heat team.
Can I give you a Heat name, by the way, that I'm confident is going to become the next guy? Keep an eye on Haywood Highsmith. Yeah, he's going to miss the first. He's going to miss the first couple weeks of the season. But
he got some run in the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, he looked like
he looked good.
Something.
Yeah, and he did. And his 3-point shots improved a lot. And I think people are counting on him a lot. There's a chance he becomes a really important 3-and-D guy for them. I'm not saying he's going to be the reason that they make another run, but I think he's going to have a big year, and he's going to be a guy that gets a nice contract summer.
They always find guys, right?
Yeah.
Like they just find guys. Is Haywood Highsmith the next version of Strus or Vincent? You know, there's a lot of optimism that Jaime Jaquez is going to be a rotation player this year. They seem to develop guys that are non-traditional exceptionally well. They don't seem to. They do develop those types of guys. So maybe Highsmith can make a guy like Strus make his loss a little bit less impactful. But they're definitely going to be interesting in Miami. Like, I could see them having an identical year. Like,
dude, I could see them winning 35 games or 55, honestly.
Like, I don't know if they can win. I don't think they're going to be a great regular season team. I think that there's too many good teams in the NBA right now, and I think Miami is going to lose too many games due to rest or injury.
Right.
I mean, you mentioned Lowry. I talked about Butler. I think I don't think they're going to be a top four playoff team, but I could see them being seven, getting in via the play-in again and making the same kind of run, just being impossible to beat in the playoffs because Spoelstra is so great as a head coach and Butler is so good as kind of a one dimension or a scoring option in the fourth quarter.
I know you love it when I do this, but can I give you my Heat fake trade and get your objective opinion?
Yes.
Can I get your objective opinion on this one in all seriousness?
Okay.
They trade Lowry, a first round pick. Maybe they even throw in Jovic if they have to Detroit for Monte Morris and Bojan Bogdanovic, both vets on expiring deals in Detroit.
It makes them better. Yeah. I mean,
I think that would be Bogdanovic would like, it was 20 points on like, 48,
he's out now, though, too. Isn't he out
39,
for like 4 weeks? He's out for like 4 weeks with a calf injury now. Like,
he's out for something. Listen, they don't have great options, but
whenever I see, by the way, whenever I see Detroit injury reports, like I roll my eyes again. Like, I'm just waiting for Cade Cunningham to find his way onto that injury report, and then you can
start
talking
about
Detroit.
Yeah, man, what's going on there?
I mean, that team has had four straight years where like 23 wins was their high watermark. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
They need Cade healthy. Cade not being healthy last year was a big problem.
I do think the Lowry. Is if you just think of where Russell Westbrook was in January of this year, I mean, we were having honest conversations about, is this guy going to play in the NBA again? And I think the Heat are a little bit more better positioned to deal someone like Lowry, attaching a pick and one of those young guys and getting enough impact back to make a serious run.
I think they'd be holding out for more, though. You know, for if you're going to deal Lowry in that contract, you're going to deal one of the handful of first round picks that you've got. I think they'll be holding out for a bigger name. Not to say that Bogdanovic isn't a really good player, and he is, and I think he would fit well in Miami. And you know, Morris is a backup guard. You know,
I mean, he's a like a solid Vincent replacement equivalent.
You could slide him into that role. I just don't know how much better that makes you. Like, what level does that put you on? If there are two tiers right now in the Eastern Conference, you've got the Boston-Milwaukee tier as one, then you've got Philadelphia, New York, Brooklyn, probably missing somebody in that mix, but you've got that tier. Does it put them on the second tier? Probably, but it still doesn't.
I think it would give them a better rotation than they had in last year's playoffs, because I think those guys they'd be trading for are better than Vincent and Strus, but
yeah.
Does it close the gap enough with the Milwaukee and Boston? I don't know.
It also, you know, avoids having to count too much on Hakez and Nikola Jovic.
Exactly.
And some of the guys that are unproven on that roster. Maybe. I think Miami's going to be aggressive in the next couple of months. That's not saying a lot because they're always aggressive, but they're a team, the Heat and the Clippers, and I guess the Sixers to a certain extent, but the Heat, the Clippers, and the Sixers are the teams I'm watching in before Thanksgiving, let's just say. I am very interested to see what the record is of those three teams, because what that record is will probably chart the course for the rest of the year. If any of those teams gets off to a sluggish start, each one is going to try to do something big to shake things up. That could mean, you know, someone could go try to get Malcolm Brogdon out of Portland, or you could see a James Harden deal, you know, for Miami.
We didn't really talk about this, and I just want to throw this out. Do you see the Grizzlies making any kind of meaningful move at center? I mean, Tice maybe is a guy they could go after. I don't know what
I don't know where that gets you. I think Jaren Jackson
just need
Jr.
bodies.
Well, they do, but you can go down like the DeMarcus Cousins, Dwight Howard route, I guess. Although those guys have been so far removed from the NBA.
Man, DeMarcus Cousins would be kind of sick there, though, just on an entertainment level.
That would be entertaining. Honestly, you want somebody with some girth, right? Because that's what Steven Adams provided. You know, Chris Herring, our colleague, wrote a piece about the rebounding rate that Adams had. And that was something they badly missed last season in the playoffs. A guy that could battle the bigger five men in the NBA. You know, Jackson is fine against a lot of centers. I mean, he's an elite defender, shot blocker. He can play the five and probably should be playing the five against a lot of centers. But there's just a number of teams, and unfortunately, several of them are at the top of the Western Conference, that you need a Steven Adams type four. So with Steven Adams gone and Brandon Clark out for, I think at least the first half of the season.
The quotes coming out of the Zach Kleiman was like, yeah, maybe March. Like, they don't look like they're counting on Clark.
But that's
at all.
That brings you back. That's kind of like the Jamal Murray injury. Murray tore his ACL.
I don't think they could count on him.
I don't think you bring a guy back from an ACL injury in the heat of a playoff race. That's just that's asking a lot. So with Adams down and Clark down, you know, I use the phrase gap year to describe the 76ers. It feels that way for Memphis now as well. They're still really good, and you know, they're going to defend with Marcus Smart out there, Jaren Jackson out there. I think Desmond Bane is going to have a big year. And Ja Morant will come back and get it look like Ja Morant probably in the second half of the season. But without Adams, without Clark, they're on a lesser tier in that conference too. So I think that injury is pretty significant for that team. All right, we will be back next week. I'm going to try to do this podcast on Tuesdays every single week during the NBA season. Until then, enjoy the first week. Some good games on Tuesday night. Some great games the rest of the week. Victor Wembanyama! Be watching him on Wednesday. And we'll talk to you then.